Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Arnie Lukes here at The Crossroads, and I'd like to welcome my guest from Canada. Welcome, Wallace Klink.
Good evening, Arnie. How are you?
I'm well. Your evening, my morning. That's right. No worries. Our subject for today, realistic constitutionalism. Constitutionalism, such an important subject and yet such a dry-sounding word. I want to cut across to some websites and just lay the groundwork as to what has actually transpired for us to be where we are today. So first of all, our front page, ALOR, and I'm going to go cut across to this painting. It was the raising of the flag when Captain Arthur Phillip arrived in Sydney Cove in January 26, 1788. It's called We Celebrate Australia Day. And with the raising of that flag came the Constitution of Britain. It came the common law of Britain. It came and brought trial by jury, habeas corpus, Magna Carta. All these things came with the raising of the flag. And the thing is that the symbolism of raising of the flag brings us to this very emotional symbol here. This depiction of a campaign, a struggle for freedom, of which in Iwo Jima the American flag was raised. It is so, so important for us to think of the symbolism that's there. It represents the freedom, the laws, the constitutions that are inherited by raising of that nation's flag at that point. And the thing is that constitutionalism, as this dry-sounding legal apparatus, it is placed before us, is something so profound that we must actually revisit it at this time. The headlines are all about lockdowns, are all about losing our rights, are all about totalitarianism. And we've got to come back to the beginnings. And the beginnings is we the people, an agreement between the people and how they shall be governed. Your thoughts, please, Wallace Klink.
Well, I think, Arnie, that the basic difference between the British system and the Christian-based system, actually, is that we have to give deference in our relationships to natural law. Now, tyrants do not pay attention to natural law because they regard themselves as the law. And this is a very, very big problem, because when they do that, they become arbitrary in their actions and they do things which are quite contrary to what we would regard as the natural and proper way of doing things. And of course, when that happens, we are no longer regarded as being part of a natural law world. We're just something to be manipulated according to whoever has most power, the ability to compel us into certain modes of behavior or conformance. And so I think that that is the fundamental difference. The Marxist view is that there is no God. And if there's no God, obviously there's no natural law. And they resent the idea of natural law, because natural law suggests that there's a law bunk above their edicts, and that robs them of their arbitrary power.
Yeah, no, that's
so. Is the real thing. Now, if there is such a thing as a God, if there's such a thing as a universe that operates according to pre-existing principles, then obviously anyone who tries to deny that is trying to usurp natural law of the universe and to draw it unto themselves for their own edification and interest, which is quite contrary to the whole idea of a universe that was made, in a sense, for prior to man, and which contains the principles of association within its nature.
Yeah, no, that's beautifully put, Wally, that the natural law, in other words, the inherent nature of the individual wanting their own freedom, one to actually exercise their own choices. And of course, we're watching that being deconstructed. As we speak, it's being deconstructed right in front of our eyes, right across the world. Now, I want to just place us back into a space and time of history. And I bring up the 1215. 1215, the forced signing of Magna Carta by King John. King John was essentially a tyrant. He had overstepped the mark. He wanted to have power over and above his station as king, if you like, as Caesar. He essentially saw himself as the monarch, supreme monarch of the land. And of course, in the British custom, it was that the people, the church, participated in a trilogy of power, a division of power, and it was considered what was moral, what was ethical. These are moral and ethical falls into natural law, that which works best. And so King John was out of order and he had to be forced back. And that's where the barons came into it, because the barons had sanctions. The barons had essentially, they were semi-autonomous and they had their own, if you like, their own armies. And so it was up to the barons and the church to combine together to represent the people and insist the restoration of the ancient freedoms. Henry VIII, a similar time. And it's interesting that similar time in history, a similar event in history, time was about, I think it was the 1500s or something with Henry VIII. And you've got the same problem, a tyrant insisting that they had power over and above their station. And so what Henry did was he actually usurped the power of the church, the authority. The church spoke with a moral or a natural law authority. This is the way things work. This is the way they work best. And I find it interesting, an interesting fact of history is that constitutional government actually emerged as a child of the functions that were going on within the church. The sheriffs, if you like, the parliaments, the calling of the representatives together to discuss things was previously done by the church, and it was the church who actually set the model, it set the standard. And since then, of course, the church has been under state control. That's what Henry did. He caused the chief bishop or archbishop to be selected by himself or by the parliament. It's evolved into that. And the fact is the church has been emasculated since then. So there is no moral or ethical or natural law boundary being presented. And here we are, 21st century, 2020, and the same type of, if you like, attempt to seize total control is happening before our eyes. It's no different. 1215, Henry VIII, it's no different. It is the same attempt to seize power over and above the legitimate station, and that is government. Government is attempting to do it. The bureaucracy is attempting to do it. And I might also add that behind the government, behind the bureaucracy, is a power that is actually over and above them. And this goes back to the, if you like, the signing of the bill that allowed the establishment of the Bank of England, 1694. This is a continuation of that usurping of power. And it's something that never should have transpired, but it did. And we have come to a conclusion on this stream of history. The conclusion, the crossroads that we are at, is it freedom or is it tyranny? We are at the crossroads, and this website is appropriately titled just that, The Crossroads. We are making a decision now that will take us forward into history. Will we pursue freedom or will we acknowledge tyranny as being the ultimate force that needs to be taken into account? Your thoughts, please, Wallace Clink.
Well, I think that balance is the essential element in the British system of government. We have legislative, executive, judicial. We have the three estates, it's Trinitarian, you'd say, which gives you a balance so that no particular element is given undue power. And we regard that as a way of safeguarding a stable and meaningful system of government where people are given the freedom which to which they're entitled. And so I think that this is the essential nature of our approach to government.
So yes, balance, Trinitarian. I think that's most important. In Australia, we have the if you like, the legislative in the sense of the federal is the upper house, the lower house, and of course the monarch or the monarch's representative. At state level, this is mirrored. We have the upper house, the lower house, and the governor representing the Queen. And even in our, it really is a branch of state government, is our local councils. They still have the councillors, the aldermen, and the mayor. They still have this Trinitarian relationship. But the thing is that it's being subverted because the power, if you like, of in regard to local councils is more or less dominated in the position of mayor. Mayor and chief executive officer. Chief executive officer is an appointment of the state. Don't be confused about that. They are selected, not elected. And that's why the position of mayor is vied for so vigorously by the political parties. They would not want an independent mayor because then that would, of course, stop the, if you like, the party hack influence in the local council area. But of course, in the state and federal sphere, it's the domination of the lower houses. The majority in the lower house, of course, claims the right to form government. And so they do. And so it is dominated by the lower house. And of course, the third level, the Queen's representative, is very carefully selected by the party in power to make sure that they are a useful apparatus, if you like, rather than being what is or what was the original agreement within our constitution, we the people, which was an independent arbitrator over and above government. So we really do need to come back to our history, come back to our civics, in order to place the idea of a limited government, a limited constitutional government into our forethoughts. Limited constitutional government. It's limited. It has specific powers and it should not move outside those powers. And those powers may be defence, it may be customs, it may be border control or whatever. But the thing is, if that power is usurped by another force or it is extended into areas that are not their domain, then of course you have this imbalance. And I think that's most important. We're watching it today. We're watching it as we speak about the level of power being exerted by government over your own body, over your own body, over the way or where you may go or where you may not go. And when you go to work, when you shall go, when you shall not go. And of course, through media, through the mainstream media, through propaganda, it's what you shall think, what you shall not think. These are very, very real threats. And of course, with the likes of Bill Gates and Fauci, what you shall and what you shall not do with your own body, the administration of medication, making it mandatory. And of course, in any sort of medication, there could be a cocktail of anything. Is it right to give this type of power to someone else? And I'm of the view that it is not. And that the constitutional argument of limiting the power of government, if you like, and of course, if government is seized by corporations or by banking or whatever, then it gives you even less and less power at your own feet to decide your own matters. So it really is, it has come to a crunch. It has come to a crunch. We really need to rethink this whole question, and we need to go back to the agreement. What is the agreement? What was the agreement? It's called our Constitution. And this is something that we need to actually place in the forefront of our mind. What was the agreement? What is the agreement? Is it currently suitable? Or does it need amendment, taking into account the King John or the Henry VIII of our day? We call them our Premier or our Prime Minister or our President, or whether it's Congress or whatever. But it's there. They're right in front of us. And they're insisting that they have power. They have power to legislate whatever. They have power over the church, so there's no moral anchor. And they're insisting that they have power over your very own body. And so they're usurping that. And we've got to come to grips with it, that it is. It's Henry VIII all over again. It's King John all over again. And he's got a different shape. He's got a different name. It's a different person. But it's the same problem, this pursuit of power. Yes, so when we look at the symbolism of the raising of the flag, Iwo Jima, this monument that's there depicting this event, and we got to recognize that with that flag comes the authority of the laws of the land, comes the authority of the Constitution, the agreement that the people have made, that it's not just there. And this is why the symbolism is most important. This cost human lives. These people put their life on the line to do this. Now, if we go to the, if you like, the symbolism in Australia, while the voyage, the First Fleet, the mortality, the morbidity of the travel coming across was very low, 2 or 3%. But the Second and Third Fleets, it was very high, 15 or 20% actually died just coming across. There was a risk going to a foreign land, having sufficient supplies for you to actually put a foothold on there and establish your own gardens, your own food sources, your own water, and your own protection. And so this is why this raising of the flag, of bringing the Constitution to this land, bringing the laws, the customs, and also being resourceful enough to actually place them there as an outreach, an extension of that culture, of that people. So it's it really is significant symbolism in those images. And we've got to consider that this Constitution, we mention it, it's an agreement between the people. The people agree to it. It's not the politicians. But if you look at what's going on today, you would think that there were the powers out there that insist, Bill Gates, Fauci, whatever, they insist that they have power over and above government to actually enforce mandate that you shall, you will, you must do this over your most private property, your own body. Your thoughts, please, Wallace Clink.
Well, absolutely. The symbolism, of course, represents an ideal, but the ideal, if it is appropriate, represents reality. And that is what counts. We must have our ideals in line with the realities of existence. And that is what is the basis that people use in order to devise rules of association. It's very important that we have our rules in close alignment with and not in conflict with natural law, the law of the universe. So this is the fundamental proposition upon which we in the British world, the English world mostly, have structured our governmental relationships. The government only has a certain limited role to play in our lives. It is not to be something that dominates our lives. It fulfills a function, but only a function. Mm-hmm. It's a functional thing, and we have to make it as functional as possible with intrusion upon what we would call the natural rights of the citizens. Mm.
Yeah, no, thank you for that, Wallace. It's it really, really is important, this idea of checking the power of government. And in that, of course, you've got the judiciary to actually take your complaints to, that the government has overstepped the mark. Unfortunately, judiciary can also become active, and instead of being observe the law and uphold the law. In particular, in Australia, the Constitution is the supreme law of this land, and so that it is their job to uphold what is the ancient customs, the ancient freedoms inherent in the Constitution, and recognise that the parliaments of the land will always try and encroach on this. And of course, now we're seeing it. It's quite obvious. There is a physical lockdown with security guards on tower buildings in the city of Melbourne. A physical lockdown with security guards. And they're insisting that they can and not leave. Now, we've got to place this in perspective. All right. The perspective is this, is that what surfaced over this past weekend, firstly, is that the test for COVID-19 is unreliable. One. It's unreliable. It is not infallible. It is unreliable. It will give false positives. The second most important is that the lockdown itself is the absolute opposite of what should occur for an infectious disease. It should be isolation. You identify the individuals who have been infected, and then you move out and identify the next round. You don't actually just do 300,000 people. You don't do entire suburbs of lockdown. You don't physically almost barricade the doors on tenement houses of 3,000 people in Melbourne. That's what's going on. That's what's going on. It's a physical, if you like, house arrest that's going on. Not on the basis of bona fide deaths. The morbidity for this in Australia over these whole few months has been 104 souls. 104. And of those, the average age was around 80 years old. There is no justification whatsoever on this COVID-19. No justification. And yet governments are doing it. They're locking down, they're imposing essentially military, martial, or house arrest on the whole nation. That's what we're seeing. It's encroaching on the freedom of every single individual, because when you do it to the least of these, you do it unto me. My freedoms are lost if my neighbor is locked down incorrectly. He hasn't breached the law. He's not a physical threat to me. He's not a, in this case, a medical threat. This is all a fabrication, a seize for power by governments. And the fact is that what surfaced over this weekend, one was unreliable law. The second is that the actual attributing of cases has changed from confirmed by the results of a test to probable, because there's an association, whether it's the neighbor, whether it's the work colleague, whether it's part of the family. It extends by a factor of 10 or even 100. If the person happens to have gone out into the community and worked amongst as many people, then 100 people are probable cases. It's a spurious argument. This is surfacing in America, Collin County Commissioners Court. Look it up, May 18, 2020. And they discuss it for at least three quarters of an hour. This fabrication of statistics, of how can they honestly say this is an accurate method? It's not. There's no scientific methodology in this whatsoever. This is entirely political. And we're seeing it extended out into the free world. Britain is doing the same with these numbers, and Australia is doing the same with the lockdown. So the free world is being, if you like, totalitarianized in front of our eyes. Now, coming back to what is the purpose of the Constitution? What is it? It is to set clear boundaries to the limits of government. It's not to impose on people. It's to impose limits on government. That's what constitutionalism is about. Limited constitutional government. And that's what we're seeing torn up in front of our eyes. So we really need to take a step back and take stock of what is going on. We've had a local, if you like, an election over the weekend, one federal seat. And it's interesting because 20% of the vote has gone to other than the major parties. 6% were informal. That means a quarter of the people out there are not, if you like, convinced that either of the major parties are doing anything that they consider constructive in this situation. And that, to me, is a clear indication. The confidence is not there of what's going on. The lack of confidence is correct. We should not have confidence in a military lockdown based on unscientific reagent testing and based on spurious accounting or statistics. Spurious. This is really, really important. Our freedoms are being torn up in front of our eyes, and King John or Henry VIII is being revisited again in the form of our leaders. And we need to take stock of this and then start to resist and overcome this tyranny. Your thoughts, please, Sam Wallace Clink.
I think you said people who are ill are not ill, but I should say people are ill-disposed. They should be restrained. And people who are ill should be, if there is a grave need to, protect other people, it's appropriate to deal with the situation where you find it. In other words, someone who is ill can be isolated. But you don't isolate the whole society, the whole civilization, because of a particular incidental thing. And you can see, I was going to say, it's not just a question that from a realistic standpoint, a functional standpoint, the damage that is done has to be taken into consideration. And the damage that has been done is absolutely phenomenal. And we have learned now that the actual transfer of wealth that has occurred during this brief period apparently has exceeded anything that has occurred at any other historical time with regard to the stock market. It comes obvious that it either was intended or is being used as an enormous power to sweep in the wealth of the people.
Yeah, that is. That's so, so, so important. Thank you so much for that, Wallace. Breaking up a bit there, but hopefully we'll capture it in the editing. I think it is. It's really, really important that we take stock of what's going on. I spoke to a person yesterday whose company is suffering badly with this COVID situation. And I call it a situation. It's not a crisis. It's an enforced situation by bureaucrats and governments. And bureaucrats, of course, are working in cahoots with private organisations, private companies, to pursue, to the benefit of these private companies, what's actually going on. Think about this. The actual proposed solution. What is the solution to this COVID-19? What is it? It's a round of vaccinations for everyone in the whole world. Well, hang on a sec. The rush to get a vaccination in to respond to this, obviously there's significant profits in that. Yes, there is. And that's why the Therapeutic Goods Association in Australia has a vested interest in this policy, and it's outworking. They have a financial interest. And of course, the World Health Organization is sponsored by big business. Bill Gates is in their boots and all. The drug and therapeutics, infectious diseases, CDC, I think, disease control in America. They're in their boots and all in this whole situation. They have a lot to gain. Chew bono, whatever it is. Who benefits? Who benefits? The drug industry benefits. And of course, they just rake in squillions on this. So that you're asking for their advice and their guidance on something that they are going to make an absolute killing on. I'm sorry, but I call that a conflict of interest. And we've really got to consider that this issue before us is a conflict of interest. It is actually there to bring in enormous profits. And so it's not just the stock market, it's also the continuation of that. That rather than clean water, clean air, healthy food, which of course maintains a healthy person, they're going to medicate and make no difference to the water, the air, or the food. It's a vested interest in my view. And I think that would hold up in any sort of reasoned thinking. So the idea of limiting constitution, the limiting constitution is to stop this very sort of perverted arrangement. It really is. And I was thinking of it just this morning. It is essentially the bastard child of the culture. It is the illegitimate outworking of the cultural inheritance that we're seeing. This is what's going on. The throne of civilization, the throne of culture, the crowning achievement is limiting government, is freedom of thought, of speech, of religion, of travel, whatever. The function of government is really, in comparison to freedom, is minor. And yet we've got this bastard child insisting that it will dominate all of life, all of everything. It has usurped the cultural inheritance. It has usurped the crown of freedom. And we need to seize it back and we need to wrestle it to the ground. Your closing thoughts and comments, please, Wallace Klink.
Well, I certainly agree with you on that, Arnie. I think actually that the ultimate goal of this type of interference, increasing, creeping, and galloping interference in the lives of the people by the state, actually by interests behind that, is really possibly the pleasure that they derive from controlling other people. It's not just material. It is material because it gives them an increasing monopoly, control of the economy and of virtually everything. But I think that the real evil, if you take it right back to its source and origin, is the ability to interfere with other people's freedom of thought, motion, and so on. If there's meaning to our lives, surely the meaning to our lives is that we've been given the power to think, we've been given the power to reason, and we have given the ability to perceive that which is moral or immoral. And if we allow that to be damaged, then of course everything goes out of control and power goes all to the center and to those who wish to seize it. So this is what we're seeing actually is happening. It's gone rampant, which may or may not be a good thing because it has become increasingly obvious. More and more people are perceiving that something is wrong and they are objecting to the infringement of their basic, normally held, legitimate freedom of thought, action, and so on. If that generates a response, an effective response, the tendency to a centralization of power may, in a sense, destroy itself, which it should, if it's unnatural. And Douglas, Major Douglas, C.H. Douglas, the founder of Social Credit, wrote an essay on realistic constitutionalism. And that deals with a number of these things in a fairly profound way. And of course, constitutionalism is supposed to give us the ability to live according to reality, natural law. And The Approach to Reality is another one of Douglas's books. booklets, I should say, and both of those essays are really quite crucial to the whole situation of human existence. And it would be highly desirable if people were to read those two essays, but in general, that we should become more and more aware of what we are, who we are, why we are, and what rules or regulations or customs we should really live by. And so I think that this is the, and as these things have been subject to such damaging destruction through the educational system, which has been usurped by people who have the will to power. They're not just simply unbiased observers exploring the nature of reality. They're utilizing power to control other people and whole societies. And it has to come to an end. One way or another, it must come to an end because it is contrary to reality. And when you violate natural law, you usually fairly quickly end up in a lot of very serious trouble, because you will generate results which are not in accordance with the law of the universe, and then you've got trouble because things will not work out for you.
Beautifully put. Thank you so much for that, Wallace Klink. Most profound that we're shown here that this thing before us, if you like, the challenge before us in this time in history is there. I'm going to cut across to our website, because I just want to walk through that this information is readily available. It's not going to come easy. It comes with effort, but nothing without effort is really worth going after. So the effort is there if you want it. The effort is there, the tools are there. In our Actionist Corner, most of the work is done there. But in this case, Wallace is referring to two booklets, Social Credit Library, up here on the right-hand side. And there it is, this is our Social Credit Library. And in the center of it is Douglass. And Douglass, Realistic Constitutionalism, under here. There it is, Realistic Position, Realistic Constitutionalism is there. And the other book that Wallace referred to, they're all there. We've made an effort to make sure that the works of Douglass are available for you. Simply download, and there it is. And if you need a printed copy, get on to us, and we'll see what we can do for you to get a printed copy to wherever you are in the world. That's the service that we do. We've also got the bookshop, of course, the Veritas Books. So, most interesting discussion, the bastard child of civilization. This is what we're looking at. And the response, realistic constitutionalism. And Douglass has done a great service by leading the way on this restoration of right order. Thank you so much, Wallace Klink, at this forum on the Crossroads.
Well, Arnie, I'm pleased to have participated in it. I hope that it has added something to the knowledge of the viewers. There's much more to it, but I think we covered the key basic issues.